2. The French Connection. Colette Brunet could not imagine a church more spectacular than the Notre-Dame de Paris, but she crept quickly past it without a glance or a moment's pause to admire the way the moonlight reflected off the stained glass windows. She had dressed as a young man, pulling her dark hair back and up into a sweeper's cap, and had created a bruise around her eye with purple makeup to distract any onlookers from noticing her unusual eyes. Few Parisians had Japanese blood. Her hand was on the pistol inside her dark, long jacket as she followed the limping movements of her target, Father Alphonse Mouger. The priest was striding at a surprisingly fast clip, considering his chubbiness. He looked furtively over his shoulder. Twice she had to throw herself out of his line of sight. She believed Father Mouger was working with the Clockwork Guild, an organization she had learned about only 9 months earlier while hunting for a foreign submarine. That mission on the Atlantic had been amazing and eye-opening, but it had cost her much more than she could have imagined possible. She had stood on the ship Vendetta as it was pulled down into the water. Now she felt the same horrible sensation as her career sank. No longer was she first among les espions, the French secret agents at the Deuxième Bureau. The agency had picked her brain about her mission in the Atlantic and become fascinated by Modo, salivating at the thought of an agent who could change his shape. Every bit of information she had given up felt like a betrayal of Modo, but if she hadn't shared it, she would have betrayed her country. Then the bureaucrats, desk sitters, who'd been jealous of her quick ascent in the ranks, pulled out their knives. They cast doubt on her stories of an underwater city. They pointed out her divided loyalties. She was, after all, Enoko, half Japanese and half French. They whispered lies and scribbled those lies until they acquired the ring of truth. Then one day, two burly gendarmes came to her desk, grabbed her by the shoulders, escorted her to the front gates of the bureau, and tossed her to the curb. She was warned that if she betrayed any secrets of her country, she would be imprisoned, tortured, and shot. Now Father Mouger entered the cathedral. If she was correct, he was carrying the original documents that revealed the last known location of Modo's parents. The Catholic Church was even more enamored of paperwork than the Deuxième Bureau itself. She couldn't think of Modo without a shudder, not of fear or revulsion, though his horrid appearance had haunted her for these many months, but a shudder at her own failure. She had not been strong enough to face his face. Fate had given her a chance to forge a true friendship with a fellow agent, a man more amazing than any other she had met, and she had turned away. How spineless. Her former employers had sent agents to England to search for Modo and any relatives he may have. She had been on the team up until the moment of her dismissal. She'd decided to take on the task herself, sifting through hospital files and copies of birth records for any mention of a freak child, reading nearly every outlandish article of every newspaper published in England, reports about boys in India with three eyes, conjoined Siamese twins, a girl with four arms. Colette found no mention of a shape-changing child. It wasn't until she'd visited the Imperial Bibliothèque Nationale that she got her first break. There she had struck up a relationship with a librarian who had a particular and somewhat distasteful interest in les phénomènes de cirque, circus freaks. He had dropped a massive collection of clippings and diaries onto her desk. She sifted through these to discover an account of a monstrously malformed boy from Nanterre who had been mentioned in Le Temps in 1858. It was the right year, assuming Modo was near her age. The article made her reconsider her assumption that Modo had been born in England. After all, the British were known to scour the world for spies. Could Modo have been born in France? Mon Dieu! She found a transcript of an interview with a midwife who had helped give birth to a demon straight from hell, but born of woman's flesh. So she pursued the midwife to Nanterre. The woman's name was Marie. She had only three teeth and had taken to drink in her later years. Her harrowing account of the birth made Colette cringe. The midwife had actually screamed at the sight of Le Petit Monstre as it was pulled into the world. Colette left that meeting with a possible last name for Modo's parents, Hébert. The next day the midwife died, drowned in the Seine. Colette would have thought it an accident, except a week later the librarian from Imperial Bibliothèque Nationale fell from the roof of the library to his death. The Deuxième Bureau rarely resorted to such crude methods. She suspected another organization was on the same path, and might even have someone on her trail. It was the British, perhaps, or the Russians. She made discreet inquiries and followed the trail of rumors, until she discovered that a family of potters named Hébert had once lived in Nanterre, though no one had seen them for years. She learned that indeed they had had a child whom they were believed to have abandoned, though no one had ever set eyes on the infant. Perhaps it had been left at Notre Dame. This was a common occurrence because many believed their cast-off children would have the greatest chance of a future if left in the greatest church in the land. And so, a week earlier, she had visited the church, but Moget, the archivist, had not allowed her so much as a peek at his records. This surprised her, since she'd had little trouble getting similar information from other churches. She waited outside the church for him to leave, then followed him through the streets of Paris. After several hours of surveillance, she had spotted him meeting with a white-haired man. She'd read their lips from a distance, and was only able to decipher the date they planned to meet again, this very day. The priest appeared anxious as he entered the great doors of Notre Dame, stopping in the doorway to look about like a frightened bird. Colette waited behind a statue until he entered, then snuck in the doors. She crept through the nave of the church, hiding behind columns. The moonlight shone through the massive stained-glass windows, splashing colors across the marble floor. She trailed Moget into the chapel of the Holy Sacrament and outside again as he crossed the short distance to the Stone Archives building. She couldn't follow him directly inside. The building was too small. She hunted around the circumference for another entrance, thankful the priests didn't keep guard dogs. Who would want to steal church records? The only other door she found was secured by a large, ancient lock. Seeing a darkened window on the second floor, she climbed spider-like up the side of the building, gripping the rough edges of the stone. She was thankful that every morning she completed a vigorous exercise regime designed by her late father. Her arms and legs were strong. She grabbed the windowsill and it broke off, pieces of stone clattering to the ground. She would have fallen if not for a firm grasp on the protruding and solid nose of a gargoyle. "Merci," she whispered, smiling at him. There was no sign that anyone had heard the noise. She found a more secure piece of sill on the second attempt. The window opened easily and she slipped in, stepping onto creaking wood. As her eyes adjusted, she saw she was on a desk, musty volumes stacked beside her. She lowered herself to the floor, crept across the room and opened the door a crack. Light. Two figures, one of them Moget, were visible at the bottom of a set of stairs, their voices distant mumbles. She opened the door enough to slip through and peer over the railing. She was surprised to hear them speaking English.
7,500.
It was Moget's nasal tone, his French accent quite light.
"Don't be offish," a reedy voice warned. "I humbly suggest you provide the information free of cost."
Colette thought the second man's voice had an Irish lilt. She'd never seen such white hair. It glowed in the low light. He was thin, his tan suit very stylish.
I will take 6,500, but no less. This is very important information. You're not the only agency who has requested it."
"But I am here. The other agencies are not. And what if you receive nothing?"
Father Moget was holding a paper in his right hand, clearly shaking.
"That was not the agreement. And why did you bring this man with you?"
He motioned towards a grey pillar. But not a pillar, Colette realized. Rather, a brute of a man, standing dead still.
"Is the name on it?"
Serpent-like, the thin man snatched the paper from Moget's hand, then read it.
"Names, addresses. Perhaps this is helpful."
5,500,
Moget pleaded.
"Mr. Lime, please. I have risked my position."
"It is Lime. Not Mr. Lime."
He signalled to the larger man, who didn't respond.
"Ah, such mush for brains. Can you not obey a simple gesture? Fine, I shall use words. Typhon, Please separate the dear father's head from his body.
The monstrous man grunted an answer, and battered aside Moshe's feeble attempt to block him. He wrapped one hand around the father's neck.
No, no,
Moshe choked.
She couldn't let the priest die.
Colette cocked her pistol and charged down the stairs, leaping high and landing several feet behind her targets. She pointed the gun at Lime's heart.
Release him,
she commanded. Lime smiled as though he'd expected her all along. His teeth glittered in the light of the gas lamp.
Why?
He asked.
I'll shoot you if you don't.
With his back to her, the beast Typhon continued to choke Father Moshe.
And what will that accomplish?
Lime asked.
Will it stop the moon shifting in the sky? Will it silence the music of the spheres? He wanted to wax philosophical while she pointed a gun at him. He was mad. Drop the paper, too, she added. Now.
Again, that smile. His glinting teeth, if her eyes weren't deceiving her, were made of sharpened metal.
A girl dressed as a boy tells a man what to do.
With some drama, he held the paper high and dropped it. On a lucky current of air, it floated over and landed between them. She lunged and grabbed it, not allowing the pistol to waver.
You won't leave this room alive, he said quietly. Your bones will be broken. Your brain stomped to gruel. Your thoughts will leak onto the earth. You must be a failed poet. That's not how this will play out. I will it to be so, and so it will be. Can the tides of destiny be stopped?
Madness could only be met by madness, she decided. She fired, intentionally missing Lime by inches and shattering a lantern behind him. Lime didn't budge, though he did open his sneering lips to say,
Release the priest.
Typhon dropped Moshe, and the archivist fell to the ground like a sack.
That's better, Colette said. Now back away from the priest.
Lime smiled again.
Please, Typhon, he said to his companion. Kill the whiffling girl in an egregiously painful manner.
The massive man turned, his eyes dead. Colette froze as he lunged. It was as though a mountain were falling towards her. Then she heard her father's voice.
Always be ready to fight.
She lurched backwards, pulling twice on the trigger. The first bullet struck the wall, the second a stack of books.
Steady, her father's voice whispered. Aim for the center of the chest.
The third bullet hit the man in the sternum, but he didn't even stagger. The fourth and fifth bullets punched two holes in his greatcoat right near his heart. Then she was pulling the trigger madly, the hammer clicking uselessly as the giant thrust out an arm to grab her. His skin was slightly greenish, and stitches snaked up the side of his neck. His eyes were cold, unseeing. She ducked, and he snatched her fluttering scarf and pulled, yanking so hard that she was lifted into the air. The scarf unwound from her neck, and she rolled across the marble floor, letting the piece of paper go. She'd landed close to the door, so she got up and ran, but something struck her hard in the back of the head. White birds flapped in all directions. No, not birds, she realized, as she scrambled to her feet, but pages from a book. I was almost brained by a book. She nearly chuckled. Then, without a backward glance, she tore open the door and fled into the night.